You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, June the 19th. The state legislature is looking at bringing universal health care to Wisconsin. But exactly what it will look like is still up for discussion. This hour, we will talk about the different plans that are out there, compare and contrast them, and welcome your questions. Over the past several weeks, Ben Marins in the afternoon has talked with legislators, sponsors of the different universal health care plans for Wisconsin. The three proposals are called the Wisconsin Health Security Act, the Wisconsin Healthcare Partnership Plan, and the Wisconsin Health Plan, and all would provide universal coverage. We'll talk about how they would do that, how they would pay for it, and we will welcome your questions or comments on all of them. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or you can send us an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Ed Miller. He is a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, and he specializes in health policy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. There are three basic plans here. Are they much different?
Right. There are three plans. One is very different than the other two.
Okay, which one is that?
And that's the Wisconsin Health Plan.
Okay.
The Wisconsin Health Plan is a much more complicated plan. They say it's a simple plan. Appears to be more complicated. It essentially sets up, it's not that much different than what the President Bush has been advocating, because it essentially sets up two levels of health care, or two levels to pay it. One is a health savings account, and the President and Republicans have been very strong on these health savings accounts. This is where money is deposited in an account tax-free, and that money can then be used for health care. And then a catastrophic policy that would pay for large health care expenses. And so that's essentially what it does. Now, they have in their plan more than either the other two have extraordinary details about what is covered and how things are covered and things like that. But they would have it paid for by the employer, and the employee would be a split payment.
Mm-hmm. The other two, then, what are the basics?
The other two are, one is the Wisconsin Healthcare Partnership Plan. This is essentially the union plan. This is put out by the AFL-CIO. And this would establish state insurance coverage, and there would be a committee, and in this case, employers would contribute to the plan. Employees would not, as I can determine, except employees would pay like co-payments when they receive health care, and this would be like either workers' compensation or unemployment insurance. And that's what their plan is. They set up a board, for example, which is a labor management board to regulate the plan and make decisions on the plan. They would have an administrator administer the plan and that kind of stuff. But basically, they would set up a plan in which employers would contribute to the plan. And employers could have a under collective bargaining, they don't take that away, could have a more comprehensive plan if they wanted to. Essentially, it's very similar to, based upon the concept of workers' compensation. The third plan is actually the simplest plan, and that is the one which is essentially, it's a single-payer plan. It's very similar to Canada. The third plan, it's a very, very a simple plan in which there would be one payer. Again, as all of them, the employer and the employee would contribute to the plan. So this one would be split. Actually, employers would contribute 7% of their payroll tax to the plan, employees 2%, with some additional financing from cigarette tax. And it would be exactly very similar to Canada, because it also has a negotiation with the providers, which Canada does, which we generally, for example, if you look at either Medicare or Medicaid, neither one has negotiation with providers as to fees. But this plan does, which is what they do in the provinces of Canada. It also, interestingly enough, the most interesting thing, one most interesting thing about the plan is, unlike the other two, it takes Canada's approach to hospitals. And Canada's approach to hospitals is a global budgeting, where essentially you give the hospital a budget as opposed to paying the hospital on a fee-for-service basis, which we generally have not had in the United States. There's been some experimentation with it, but it is what is done, which is what is done in Canada. Global budgeting, which is, you know, a lot of this, people don't know exactly how it works. It's very similar to actually to the university, where the university receives a budget, although we do receive some tuition money per student, but we really are based upon a budget rather than a fee-for-service basis, the way the institution runs in that area. Anyway, so that's the way they set it up. So it's three plans, and they get somewhat complicated when you get into the details of what is covered and who is covered, and like the one with the least coverage, I can determine the one which would cost individuals the most. Now they'll probably say I'm wrong, but I think it is, and that's the Wisconsin Health Plan.
All right, let me check the weather forecast, and then we will find out what questions listeners have about these three plans that are currently under consideration in the state legislature, three plans to provide universal health care for Wisconsin. Which one do you like best? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Our guest, Ed Miller, professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, 18 minutes past 6 o'clock now on this Tuesday, June the 19th. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins, and after 5, Ben's guest will examine the future of wealth, politics, and education as the economy shifts from the industrial age to a knowledge-based era. He's going to be talking with Alvin Toffler. He is co-author of the new book, Revolutionary Wealth, How It Will Change Our Lives. So the legendary Alvin Toffler on with Ben Marins this afternoon after 5 o'clock. We're talking with the legendary Ed Miller, professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point, talking about the different health care plans that are currently under consideration in the state legislature to bring universal health care to Wisconsin. We're comparing and contrasting the three different proposals and wondering what questions you have and which you prefer, if you have a preference at this point. We talked a bit about the three different plans. One of them would essentially provide universal single-payer, a single-player plan. The other is backed by the unions in Wisconsin, and the other is a complicated plan that depends on some health savings account as well as catastrophic coverage. What questions you have about these plans? Do you think it's feasible for Wisconsin to pass some sort of universal health care plan, or is this something that the federal government should be doing? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Professor Miller, isn't this something that the federal government should be doing?
That's my view is that, because what is happening is that a number of states are taking different actions. So the one that a lot of people discussed is the Massachusetts plan. And the Massachusetts plan is that individuals will be required to get health insurance. And so individuals must have health insurance. So if the employer does not provide health insurance, the individual must then go out and get health insurance. If they're low income, they get subsidies. And they those employers have some penalty to pay, which then goes into the fund. But it's basically an individual plan. I mean, it's the idea of the individual must have it. The interesting opposite, a lot of people talking about state health plans, they're talking about a catastrophic where the state would pick up large expenses. Tennessee has gone just the opposite. And Tennessee has taken a health plan in which lower expenses under $25,000 are covered by the state, and the higher expenses you can buy a policy for. And the argument of the governor there was that they cannot afford a catastrophic health care expenses, and most people have problems with the everyday expenses. So anyway, Tennessee has that approach. California is considering another approach, and so forth. So the problem is when you get a patchwork, if you got 50 of them, mm-hmm. and of course Hawaii's had an employer mandate for a long time, you create different situations in different states in which businesses may decide to locate depending upon how much they have to pay in the health plan. Physicians, for example, may decide that, well, they would rather locate in this state rather than this state because of the reimbursement rates and how the health plans are set up. And so you create all kinds of economic competition situations which wouldn't exist if you had a national plan.
Yeah. Let's take our first caller, Sandra in Greenfield. Hi, Sandra.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. I recommend having a health care plan that does not involve the employer, and that would attract businesses to Wisconsin and create many more jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all three of these do involve the employer, though, don't they?
Right. They all involve the employer paying somewhat. And this is, of course...
Well, the less the employer has to pay, the more attractive it would be. For a national-type health care plan, they would be more attracted to come to Wisconsin if they had paid less for health care.
Right.
Hold on, Sandra. Professor
right, and some of these plans argue that the employer would be paying less than they're paying now. But what's happened in the United States, of course, is that around World War II, that wages were controlled. And so businesses, in order to attract employees, added what was called a fringe benefit. Plus, health insurance was deductible expense against their taxes. And so consequently, we had this vast increases of health insurance by business offering these to get employees. And this is how our system then developed as this employer-related health expenses, which creates all kinds of problems. As your caller said, Sandra said that it's a problem of competitiveness for business. Cars, for example, it costs about $1,600 a car, health expenses for automobiles. As a matter of fact, some auto executives have said they're really a healthcare company that occasionally makes cars. Mm-hmm. Because of the cost there in that particular case. So these have gone up, and no longer is it considered a fringe benefit, but it's really a major not only cost to employers, but also driving wages and the like. If you look at teachers, for example, we have in Wisconsin the qualified economic offer, which controls the amount of total compensation that the teachers can get an increase of each year. That compensation is almost totally eaten up by increases in health care costs and insurance. So the increase in salary is pretty small, which has dropped Wisconsin in our rating among the states in terms of where we pay teachers. But that's all because of health care. It's associated with employment, as Sandra notes.
Yeah. Well, what if you're self-employed, or you're the boss, or you don't have an employer to do this?
Right, and you're going to have to pay into this plan. These plans all have you. They take into account the self-employed, just like Social Security would. You know, in Social Security, if you're self-employed, you pay both the employer and the employee's expenses.
Yeah. Anything else, Sandra?
Well, I felt that if everyone pays the same percentage of their income into a national health care plan, it would be more fair and equitable. If we're all created equal, we should all have the same health care under the same percentage of cost.
Right, and that's an interesting issue when you talk about percentage. You know, there are three ways of looking at this. One is currently we don't pay a percentage. You know, we pay a premium. So, for example, the employee, well, whether the employer or the employee, but if you take just the employee, for example, the employee pays the same health care expenses if they're at the bottom of the firm making the least amount of money, or they're the CEO of the firm. They pay the exact same dollar amount, which, of course, means they're paying a lower percentage in that area. You could have, as you mentioned, a flat percentage, so-called flat tax, that everybody pays a certain percentage of it, which we do for Medicare, because Medicare has no ceiling. So we, at least in terms of, we don't pay it on non-earned income, but Medicare you pay it on everything you earn. So you pay that flat percentage. We don't on Social Security where there's a ceiling, but we do on Medicare. The other way of doing it, interestingly enough, is the Wisconsin Health Plan. You pay an increasing percentage depending upon how large, essentially how big the payroll is. And so that's actually a progressive system of payment, and that's what they have in their system. Mm-hmm. So here's three ways you can look at it, either the flat dollar amount, a fixed percentage, the so-called flat tax amount, the famous Forbes flat tax, or you could have an increasing percentage based upon the idea of progressivity that those who have larger companies should be paying in more.
Now, let me share an email that we got from Jay in Madison, and I need to get it here. I'm getting a second email coming in on my screen, so I'm having a hard time reading Jay's. One of the biggest benefits, he says, to universal health care is to help small businesses and entrepreneurs. Which of these plans will make it easiest for a person to quit a job and start their own business? Any idea, Professor Miller?
Well, they all will cover, you know, individual. The problem is that the individual going into the new job or, you know, starting their own business is certainly going to have to pay. The easiest probably would be the single payer plan, because you would be in the same. Even though there's a split between the employer and the employee, the fact is that you would not change plans in that particular plan, the single payer plan. Like in Canada, for example, if you change jobs or you become an independent or whatever, you're still covered by the exact same. Essentially, it's Canadian government. This would be the situation there. So that would be, and as a matter of fact, it's the simplest plan.
Let me check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue comparing and contrasting the universal health care plans in the Wisconsin State Legislature with Ed Miller, a professor of political science at UW Stevens Point. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number if you have a question about any of these three plans, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Good morning. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday morning, June the 19th, as we compare and contrast the universal health care proposals that are under consideration in Wisconsin's state legislature. Our guest, Ed Miller, professor of political science at UW Stevens Point, who specializes in health care policy, is helping us understand the differences between the three main proposals: the Wisconsin Health Security Act, the Wisconsin Healthcare Partnership Plan, and the Wisconsin Health Plan. And we are welcoming your thoughts and questions on these three different proposals to provide universal health care to Wisconsin residents. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We wonder if you prefer one of these plans over the other, or if maybe you don't think any of them do the job, and what you would like to see in a healthcare plan or reform for Wisconsin. Our next caller is Kyle in Cottage Grove. Hi, Kyle. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Enjoy your program, and hello to your guest.
Morning.
Can't remember his name.
Professor Ed Miller.
I don't know whether I have a question or a comment, or it might be both. What I've seen is that the American people are having a hard time buying a national health care plan. But I guess the question part of it is, I'm not sure what's really embodied in them. Now, if it was shown that the costs, if you total them between Medicare, Medicaid, workers' comp, the Veterans Administration, plus the private insurance that the individual is paying, it seems like it would be a lot easier sell if all those are contained within a health care program. I think there's a lot of unseen costs that people don't see, that if we could eliminate them bureaucracies and that part of the insurance industry, I think it'd be a lot easier sell. And I can take my comment off air. Like I said, I don't know whether those are part of the plans or not, but I'll take my your comments off air.
Mm-hmm. Kyle is exactly right. The administrative cost in our current system is extraordinary. I mean, we're talking about paying somewhere between, and there's different estimates, somewhere between 25% of our cost to 30% of our cost that we're paying for health care, that essentially we're paying for administration. And that's very, very high. It's much higher than Canada. It's much higher than we pay for Medicare, for example, where Medicare's administrative cost is down to about 3 to 4%. And so we're essentially paying a lot of money, and a lot of that money we're not getting service for. Physicians have to bill different insurance companies. Insurance companies go out and sell the insurance. There's all kinds of things. We have all this cost containment. We talk about cost containment, but you remember, if you go into a hospital, for example, you got to get pre-approval to be admitted to the hospital. But somebody in that hospital has to call to get that pre-approval, and somebody on the other end has to give that pre-approval. All that is a cost in our system. So there's been several articles that say that if we could take that cost and use it to deliver health care, or a lot of that cost for health care, we could cover everybody in the United States who's not covered now without really raising any extra money. We spend a lot of money in that area. Second part of the question is, and that would be, what would be included, particularly in the Wisconsin plan, and it would exclude, all these plans have to exclude, of course, because we have no control over it, like any of the national programs, like veterans, and particularly Medicare. Medicaid, which is a state national program. It's a shared program. These plans do put that in, and so that would be included, although we would require a permission from the federal government to do that, what's called a waiver.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Kyle. There are more callers, but Professor Miller, do any of these, the three plans here, stand a chance in the Wisconsin legislature? Are we going to see one of them?
Well, there's a great pressure on Wisconsin, as well as the nation, but there's a great pressure to pass something. It is now nationally the number one domestic priority over all the priorities, just behind the problems of Iraq. And so there's tremendous pressure. Nationally, it's very, very difficult to pass it because of division between the Democrats and Republicans and the like. And this is why the states are acting.
Mm-hmm.
However, in Wisconsin, there is also great interest, both Democrats and Republicans, in doing that. But because our legislature is divided, I mean, we have one house that is Democratic and one house that is Republican, because of the political situation, I'm somewhat dubious that actually we're going to get a plan. Out there, they're going to be able to coalesce on one of these plans, at least right now anyway. Although the great pressure is not only in terms of individuals, but it's also pressure in terms of other states doing it. And, you know, Wisconsin basically saying, well, why aren't we doing it? And now the governor, of course, has his plan, which is not a universal plan, but is to cover additional individuals who are not covered. And that would be, you know, that Badger Care Plus.
Yeah, he wants all children to be covered and maybe some more lower-income people covered.
Right,
yeah.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it would be an expansion in that particular. Wisconsin, it's a little easier, actually, to do in Wisconsin than, like, Massachusetts. It's got the same situation, that we have fewer people uncovered in Wisconsin than, for example, that in nationally. We have about 10%. That are not covered in Wisconsin nationally. It's about more like 15%. But some states, such as Texas, for example, have large amounts of people. Well over a fifth of the population is not covered by insurance. Mm.
Next is Bill in Holman. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hello.
Morning.
I was wondering if any one of these three health plans passed, would everybody's premium be the same, or would somebody with a higher risk health problem pay a higher premium? Because currently I'm self-employed and I'm not insured, but I have applied and there's my premiums would be, if I would take the plan, it'd be between $1,200 and $1,500 a month. So I was just wondering if...
Right. That's an excellent question. And that is how what's called the risk assessment. And there, you know, the two main ones are the community-based. It's called community-based, which means that everybody is rated the same, and you share the risk essentially across the entire pool, which would be the whole state in this case. The other one is an experienced rating, which is based upon age, health status, and the like. And the Wisconsin health plan is actually an experienced-rated plan. This is the one that involves the health savings account and the like. And so the insurance part of it, the health savings accounts would all be the same, would be $500, as a matter of fact. And employers could contribute to that, but there would be a $500 base there that you could use to purchase health insurance. Well, above that, the insurance or catastrophic insurance would be experience-based. And there, you see, it gets very complicated. It's hard to do without a PowerPoint, because what they have established is also various tiers. So, in other words, you would have to pay more for the plan, not only on the basis of experience, according to their plan, but also you would have to pay more if you wanted a more comprehensive plan. So they have established or will establish three tiers. The state of Wisconsin has that for its employees. And if you're in Tier 1, which is the lowest coverage, then I believe most of the premium will be paid from this division. But if you want anything more than that and you have risk as well, because it's risk-related, you're going to have to pay additional amounts for any upper-level plan, any more comprehensive plan, in other words.
Yeah. For example, though, Professor Miller, the Wisconsin Health Security Act, this one that's most like Canada's or this single-payer plan, would Bill be paying $1,200 a month for premiums under that plan?
Well, he would be paying 2%. He would be paying 2% of a salary. And so whatever he makes, he would be paying. So, you know, it's hard to tell. But he'd be paying 2%. Mm-hmm. So if and an employer would be paying 7%.
Does he have to pay both?
Right. If he were self-employed, he would have to pay both. But the argument is that would be less than he's paying now.
Yeah.
Often.
Bill, thanks for the call. We're going to check our weather forecast once again, and then continue taking questions and comments about Wisconsin's proposed universal health care plans. Three different plans that are currently under consideration in the state legislature, and we are comparing and contrasting them with Ed Miller, professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 12 minutes before 7 o'clock. Coming up after 7, we're going to be talking about the C-section rate in this country, the cesarean birthing method. 1 in 3 women deliver surgically, and there are people who are concerned about the growing C-section rate in this country. We'll talk with one of them after 7 o'clock. We're talking with Ed Miller, a professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point, about the 3 healthcare proposals that are in the Wisconsin State Legislature, 3 proposals that would provide universal healthcare coverage: the Wisconsin Health Security Act, the Wisconsin Healthcare Partnership Plan, and the Wisconsin Health Plan. Jerry in Appleton is with us next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Morning, Jerry.
First thing I'd say is that we really don't have health care in the United States. We have sickness care. And I think that I don't think any of these will work until we make people responsible for their own health care. Anything, I think, is probably doomed to fail. If we take somebody who is, just like with car insurance, if they're at high risk, they pay a higher amount. And to do that the same with health care, if you smoke, if you drink, if you live a lifestyle that is one that's going to put you at higher risk for health disease, you should probably pay more for that. And, I just don't see that anything where they get that's part of the problem we're into since World War II, is that people expect this health care and don't see it as something that is, I work in the medical field, and I have people come in all the time. Well, they'll come into the emergency room for something that really is not an emergency, and they'll say, I have health care, so it's going to pay for it. And if they'd waited this, literally sometimes a matter of hours, they got in their family doctor and would have paid one quarter of what the price it cost to come in the emergency room. So whatever plan is going to be best for making people responsible for their own health care, try to live good lives, the health saving account would be something, because that way people could take that amount of money and put it into, at the end of the year, if they haven't spent it towards co-payments or towards other things, they could put it into a health club or put it into smoking cessation classes or other things, weight reduction classes. So people need to be responsible for health care. It is not a right to have health care if you don't take care of yourself. And again, I think we have sickness care, not health care. I'll take any comments off the air. Thank you.
Professor Miller.
Well, essentially, Jerry's comments, there's a lot he said there. One is whether, if you look at sickness care, that's true. In the idea, I would say, here with the plans is to make sure that the plans, and they all actually do, they don't do exactly what Jerry says, but essentially what they do is they cover preventative services. And that's the important thing in terms of a health plan in that area, because some don't. Like, for example, when Medicare was passed, a lot of the preventative services, such as general physicals, were not covered. And so to cover various preventative services and cover things that physicians can help patients in smoking cessation and things like that. The second thing he mentions is none of the plans do that I can detect, and that is have some risk stratification for payment. So therefore, and there's some private plans that actually do that. If you smoke, you have to pay more, or actually it's usually the other way around. If you don't smoke, you get a discount, those kinds of things. That's not in these plans, but that would be one thing that he mentions in that area. In terms of the emergency room, in terms of individuals, this is an issue of what we call third-party payments right now and would be in this plan. In fact, is that if you're not paying, somebody else is paying. As he mentioned, you have no constraint to use the health care system unless you pay a percentage in that area. And these plans, in particular, the union plan, called the union plan. The union plan, that particular plan, has co-payments in it. And so the co-payments, and that's the main pay for employees. And so that employees with these co-payments may be restrained in using health care that they may not need. Although in the United States, we tend to use less health care per person than other countries. I should point that out in that area. In terms of the health savings accounts that he mentioned, which is in one of the plans, which is in the Wisconsin health plan, he was making reference, Jerry was making reference to really what's now called consumer-driven medicine. And this is the idea is that the consumer makes decisions. And the idea that consumers don't have to make decisions now because they're covered, although often with using the emergency room, you have to pay a higher copayment if you're not admitted to the hospital, which would suggest that it may not be an emergency. But the idea here is that the by having to pay out yourself, you would be more careful about your selection and when you use your health care. The problem with, there's many problems with this, but one particular problem with this is that individuals don't know. Individuals don't know what the quality of the services are. We have produced some quality reviews of hospitals, for example, but very little quality reviews of providers. And so, therefore, if an individual is trying to choose Dr. A versus Dr. B, there is really little way that they can know which one to go to in that area in terms of quality. In terms of price, we don't know. Does an individual know what Dr. A charges for a physical versus Dr. B? We don't know that. So if you're putting the ball in the consumer's, you know, court and saying, okay, here's money, this is a consumer-driven health plan, you have to make the decisions, on what basis you're going to make the decisions? If I were buying tennis shoes, or running shoes they call them, running shoes, I can make that the decision. I can look at magazines, I can see quality, and I certainly can see price. I can go in and look at the price. But you can't do that in the medical area, and that's a problem.
Thank you, Jerry, for the call. Deborah in Waukegan is next. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. Yeah, I've been a caseworker around a number of programs, and I've seen so many programs, like, for example, Social Security Disability. It seems to me spend so much time saying no to people. I consider that a real disservice. And I'm wondering what your guest thinks as to which of these programs is likely to deliver health care most effectively to people with the least cumbersome administrative structure for saying no. I mean, I think it's important for people to have health care when they need it, and I think I would rather see one phony get away with it than, you know, 60 people have to go through 3 appeal levels because of an administrative structure. So that's one of my concerns.
Mm-hmm. Well, the single-payer plan, the way it's designed, it would have the least amount of hurdles. It would be the easiest plan and would have the lowest administrative cost.
Thank you, Deborah. Let's try to get in another call or two before we're done. Jean in Viroqua, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I go for my yearly check on May the 9th. And I spent maybe 30 minutes with a doctor, and they did one vial of blood, and I get 2 separate bills. One is $248.55 for the doctor. The one for the one blood of vial is $249.80. To me, the doctors and hospitals should have more accountability to the patient. And I spent 2 agonizing days worrying about this bill that I go once a year for. And it's very upsetting to an older person.
Well, if you're paying for it, you're going to be paying more than would for somebody who has insurance, for example. I mean, I don't know whether you have insurance or not, but if you have insurance and are covered, you will be paying more because there will not be a discount.
That isn't right.
What?
That shouldn't be right. The doctors in the hospital should be more accountable to the patient.
Right.
Why does it get mixed up with all the insurance and all the different laws and this and that and the other and the cost of paperwork and so forth?
Right, because that's the way the system is right now is that each insurance company has negotiated different discounts. And as a matter of fact, a big issue is that individuals who go into hospitals are paying top dollar, and now they're trying to give them the discount if they don't have insurance. So in effect, those who don't have insurance, a lot of times the poor people who don't have insurance, are paying the most. Their insurance is paying less because they've worked out a discount. And so now some hospitals say they will give discounts to you know, to the uninsured. But still, I mean, this is a real problem. Yeah. If you're sitting in the doctor's office, everybody in that doctor's office who's got different insurance is paying different amounts, even if they're getting the same service. Just like on an airplane, everybody's paying different amounts that are flying to the same place.
Tim and Wapaka, we're almost out of time.
A couple of quick points. One is I know in Southern California, there's about close to 100 hospitals that have gone under because they're mandated to provide health care, and a lot of it is to illegals who never pay the bill and just disappear into society and probably use the system over and over again. But the other thing is that we have a major issue coming up with Social Security.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Tim, we had less than a minute. I thought you wanted to ask who collects the premiums, and we only have 30 seconds.
Just on that point, that what is happening is that, and even the individuals that are not covered, that cost is then shifted to others. So those who are covered are paying more, or actually pay the bill, are paying more than they would otherwise do. So these plans, by covering everybody, all these plans, by covering everybody, would reduce the so-called cost shifting.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Ed Miller, professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point, talking with us about the health care plans for universal health care in the Wisconsin legislature.